"Steady now," shouted Ugluk from the rear.
A sudden thought leapt into Pippin's mind, and he acted on it at once. He swerved aside to the right and dived out of the reach of his clutching guard, head first into the mist. He landed sprawling on the grass.
"Halt!" yelled Ugluk.
There was for a moment turmoil and confusion. Pippin sprang up and ran, but the orcs were after him. Some suddenly loomed up right in front of him.
"No hope of escape," thought Pippin. "But there is a hope that I've left some of my own marks unspoiled on the wet ground."
He groped with his two tied hands at his throat and unclasped the brooch of his cloak. Just as long arms and hard claws seized him, he let it fall.
"There, I suppose it'll lie until the end of time," he thought. "I don't know why I did it. If the others have escaped, they've probably all gone with Frodo."
A whip-thong curled round his legs, and he stifled a cry.
"Enough," shouted Ugluk, running up. "He's still got to run a long way yet. Make 'em both run. Just use the whip as a reminder." "But that's not all," he snarled, turning to Pippin. "I shan't forget. Payment is only put off. Leg it."
Neither Pippin nor Merry remembered much of the later part of the journey. Evil dreams and evil waking were blended into a long tunnel of misery, with hope growing ever fainter behind. They ran and they ran, striving to keep up the pace set by the orcs, licked every now and again with a cruel thong cunningly handled. If they halted or stumbled, they were seized and dragged for some distance. The warmth of the orc draught had gone. Pippin felt cold and sick again. Suddenly he fell face downward on the turf. Hard hands with rending nails gripped and lifted him. He was carried like a sack once more, and darkness grew about him. Whether the darkness of another night, or a blindness of his eyes, he couldn't tell. Dimly he became aware of voices clamouring. It seemed that many of the orcs were demanding a halt. Ugluk was shouting. He felt himself flung to the ground, and he lay as he fell, till black dreams took him. But he didn't long escape from pain. Soon the iron grip of merciless hands was on him again. For a long time he was tossed and shaken, and then slowly the darkness gave way, and he came back to the waking world and found that it was morning. Orders were shouted, and he was thrown roughly on the grass. There he lay for a while, fighting with despair. His head swam, but from the heat in his body he guessed that he'd been given another draught. An orc stooped over him and flung him some bread and a strip of raw dried flesh. He ate the stale bread hungrily, but not the meat. He was famished, but not yet so famished as to eat flesh flung to him by an orc, the flesh of he dared not guess what creature. He sat up and looked about. Merry was not far away. They were by the banks of a swift, narrow river. Ahead mountains loomed. A tall peak was catching the first rays of the sun. A dark smudge of forest lay on the lower slopes before them. There was much shouting and debating among the orcs. A quarrel seemed on the point of breaking out again between the northerners and the Isengarders. Some were pointing back away south, and some were pointing eastward.
"Very well," said Ugluk. "Leave them to me, then. No killing, as I've told you before. But if you want to throw away what we've come all the way to get, throw it away. I'll look after it. Let the fighting Uruk-hai do the work as usual. If you're afraid of the whiteskins, run, run. There's the forest," he shouted, pointing ahead. "Get to it. It's your best hope. Off you go, and quick, before I knock a few more heads off to put some sense into the others."
There was some cursing and scuffling, and then most of the northerners broke away and dashed off, over 100 of them, running wildly along the river towards the mountains. The hobbits were left with the Isengarders, a grim dark band, 40 at least of large, swart, slant-eyed orcs with great bows and short, broad-bladed swords. A few of the larger and bolder northerners remained with them.
"Now we'll deal with Grishnak," said Ugluk.
But some even of his own followers were looking uneasily southwards.
"I know," growled Ugluk. "The cursed horse boys have got wind of us. But that's all your fault, Snug. You and the other scouts ought to have your ears cut off. But we're the fighters. We'll feast on horse flesh yet, or something better.
At that moment, Pippin saw why some of the troop had been pointing eastward. From that direction there now came hoarse cries, and there was Grishnak again, and at his back a couple of score of others like him, long-armed, crooked-leg orcs. They had a red eye painted on their shields. Ugluk stepped forward to meet them.
"So you've come back," he said. "Thought better of it, eh?"
"I've returned to see that orders are carried out and the prisoners safe," answered Grishnak.
"Indeed," said Ugluk. "Waste of effort. I'll see that orders are carried out in my command. And what else did you come back for? You went in a hurry. Did you leave anything behind?"
"I left a fool," snarled Grishnak. "But there were some stout fellows with him, and they're too good to lose. I knew you'd lead them into a mess. I've come to help them."
"Splendid!" laughed Ugluk. "But unless you've got some guts for fighting, you've taken the wrong way. Lugbor's was your road. The Whiteskins are coming. What's happened to your precious Nazgul? Has he had another mount shot under him? Now, if you've brought him along, that might have been useful, if these Nazgul are all they make out."
"Nazgul! Nazgul!" shouted Grishnak, shivering and licking his lips, as if the word had a foul taste that he savoured painfully. "You speak of what is deep beyond the reach of your muddy dreams, Ugluk," he said. "Nazgul!" "Ah! All that they make out. One day you'll wish that you hadn't said that, ape!"
he snarled fiercely.
"You ought to know that they're the apple of the great eye. But the winged Nazgul, not yet, not yet. He won't let them show themselves across the great river yet. Not too soon. They're for the war and other purposes."
"You seem to know a lot," said Ugluk. "More than is good for you, I guess. Perhaps those in Lugbor's might wonder how and why. But in the meantime, the Uruk-hai of Isengard can do the dirty work as usual. Don't stand slavering there. Get your rabble together. The other swine are legging it to the forest. You'd better follow. You wouldn't get back to the great river alive. Right, off the mark. Now, I'll be on your heels."
The Isengarders seized Merry and Pippin again and slung them on their backs. Then the troop started off. Hour after hour they ran, pausing now and again only to sling the hobbits to fresh carriers, either because they were quicker and hardier, or because of some plan of Grishnak's. The Isengarders gradually passed through the orcs of Mordor, and Grishnak's folk closed in behind. Soon they were gaining also on the northerners ahead. The forest began to draw nearer. Pippin was bruised and torn. His aching head was grated by the filthy jowl and hairy ear of the orc that held him. Immediately in front were bowed backs, and tough, thick legs going up and down, unresting, as if they were made of wire and horn, beating out the nightmare seconds of an endless time. In the afternoon, Ugluk's troop overtook the northerners. They were flagging in the rays of the bright sun, winter sun shining in a pale, cool sky though it was. Their heads were down and their tongues lolling out.
"Maggots," jeered the Isengarders. "You're cooked. The Whiteskins will catch you and eat you. They're coming."
A cry from Grishnak showed that this was not mere jest. Horsemen, riding very swiftly, had indeed been sighted. Still far behind, but gaining on the orcs, gaining on them like a tide over the flats on folk straying in quicksand. The Isengarders began to run with the redoubled pace that astonished Pippin, a terrific spurt it seemed for the end of a race. Then he saw that the sun was sinking, falling behind the misty mountains, shadows reached over the land. The soldiers of Mordor lifted their heads and also began to put on speed. The forest was dark and close. Already they had passed a few outlying trees. The land was beginning to slope upwards ever more steeply, but the orcs didn't halt. Both Ugluk and Grishnak shouted,
spurring them on to a last effort.
"They'll make it yet. They'll escape," thought Pippin.
And then he managed to twist his neck so as to glance back with one eye over his shoulder. He saw that riders away eastward were already level with the orcs, galloping over the plain. The sunset gilded their spears and helmets, and glinted in their pale, flowing hair. They were hemming the orcs in, preventing them from scattering, and driving them along over the line of the river. He wondered very much what kind of folk they were. He wished now that he had learned more in Rivendell, and looked more at maps and things. But in those days the plans for the journey seemed to be in more competent hands, and he'd never reckoned with being cut off from Gandalf or from Strider, and even from Frodo. All that he could remember about Rohan was that Gandalf's horse, Shadowfax, had come from that land. That sounded hopeful as far as it went.
"But how will they know that we're not orcs?" he thought. "I don't suppose they've ever heard of hobbits down here. I suppose I ought to be glad that the beastly orcs look like being destroyed, but I'd rather be saved myself."
The chances were that he and Merry would be killed together with their captors before even the men of Rohan were aware of them. A few of the riders appeared to be bowmen, skilled at shooting from a running horse. Riding swiftly into range, they shot arrows at the orcs that straggled behind, and several of them fell. Then the riders wheeled away out of the range of the answering bows of their enemies, who shot wildly, not daring to talk. This happened many times, and on one occasion arrows fell among the Isengarders. One of them, just in front of Pippin, stumbled and did not get up again. Night came down without the riders closing in for battle. Many orcs had fallen, but fully 200 remained. In the early darkness the orcs came to a hillock. The eaves of the forest were very near, probably no more than 3 furlongs away, but they could go no further. The horsemen had encircled them. A small band disobeyed Ugluk's command and ran on towards the forest. Only 3 returned.
"Well, here we are," sneered Grishnak. "Fine leadership. I hope the great Ugluk will lead us out again."
"Put those halflings down," ordered Ugluk, taking no notice of Grishnak. "You, Lugdush, get 2 others and stand guard over them. They're not to be killed unless the filthy whiteskins break through, understand? As long as I'm alive, I want them. But they're not to cry out, and they're not to be rescued. Bind their legs."
The last part of the order was carried out mercilessly, but Pippin found that for the first time he was close to Merry. The orcs were making a great deal of noise, shouting and clashing their weapons, and the hobbits managed to whisper together for a while.
"I don't think much of this," said Merry. "I feel nearly done in. Don't think I could crawl away far, even if I was free."
"Lembas," whispered Pippin. "Lembas, I've got some. Have you? I don't think they've taken anything but our swords."
"Yes, I had a packet in my pocket," answered Merry. "But it must be better to crumbs. Anyway, I can't put my mouth in my pocket."
"You won't have to. I've..."
But just then a savage kick warned Pippin that the noise had died down, and the guards were watchful. The night was dark and cold. All round the knoll on which the orcs were gathered, little watchfires sprang up, gold and red in the darkness, a complete ring of them. They were within a long bowshot, but the riders didn't show themselves against the light, and the orcs wasted many arrows shooting at the fires until Ugluk stopped them. The riders made no sound. Later in the night, when the moon came out of the mist, then occasionally they could be seen, shadowy shapes that glinted now and again in the white light as they moved in ceaseless patrol.
"They'll wait for the sun, curse them," growled one of the guards. "Why don't we get together and charge through? What's old Ugluk think he's doing, I should like to know?" "I dare say you would," snarled Ugluk, stepping up from behind. "Meaning, I don't think at all, eh? Curse you! You're as bad as the other rebel, the maggots and the apes of Lugmoors. No good trying to charge with them. They just squeal and bolt. And there are more than enough of these filthy horse boys to mop up our lot on the flat. There's only one thing those maggots can do. They can see like gimlets in the dark. But these white skins have better night eyes than most men, from all I've heard. And don't forget their horses. They can see the night breeze, or so it's said. Still, there's one thing the fine fellows don't know. Maho and his lads are in the forest, and they should turn up any time now. Ogluk's words were enough, apparently, to satisfy the Isengarders, but the other orcs were both dispirited and rebellious. They posted a few watchers, but most of them lay on the ground, resting in the pleasant darkness. It did indeed become very dark again, for the moon passed westward into thick cloud, and Pippin could not see anything a few feet away. The fires brought no light to the hillock. The riders were not, however, content merely to wait for the dawn and let their enemies rest. A sudden outcry on the east side of the knoll showed that something was wrong. It seemed that some of the men had ridden in close, slipped off their horses, crawled to the edge of the camp, and killed several orcs, and then had faded away again. Ogluk dashed off to stop a stampede. Pippin and Merry sat up. Their guards, Isengarders, had gone with Ogluk. But if the hobbits had any thought of escape, it was soon dashed. A long, hairy arm took each of them by the neck and drew them close together. Dimly they were aware of Grishnak's great head and hideous face between them. His foul breath was on their cheeks. He began to paw them and feel them. Pippin shuddered as hard, cold fingers groped down his back.
"Well, my little ones," said Grishnak in a soft whisper, "enjoying a nice rest or not? A little awkwardly placed, perhaps. Swords and whips on one side and nasty spears on the other. Little people shouldn't meddle in affairs that are too big for them." His fingers continued to grope. There was a light like a pale but hot fire behind his eyes. The thought came suddenly into Pippin's mind, as if caught direct from the urgent thought of his enemy.
"Grishnak knows about the ring. He's looking for it, while Ogluk is busy. He probably wants it for himself."
Cold fear was in Pippin's heart, yet at the same time he was wondering what use he could make of Grishnak's desire.
"I don't think you'll find it that way," he whispered. "It isn't easy to find."
"Find it?" said Grishnak. His fingers stopped crawling and gripped Pippin's shoulder. "Find what? What are you talking about, little one?"
For a moment Pippin was silent. Then suddenly in the darkness he made a noise in his throat.
"Gollum, Gollum."
"Nothing, my precious," he added.
The hobbits felt Grishnak's fingers twitch.
"Oh-ho," hissed the goblin softly. "That's what he means, is it? Oh-ho, very, very dangerous, my little ones."
"Perhaps," said Merry, now alert and aware of Pippin's guess.
"Perhaps, and not only for us. Still, you know your business best. Do you want it or not? And what would you give for it?" "Do I want it? Do I want it?" said Grishnak, as if puzzled, but his arms were trembling. "What would I give for it? What do you mean?"
"We mean," said Pippin, choosing his words carefully, "that it's no good groping in the dark. We could save you time and trouble. But you must untie our legs first, or we'll do nothing and say nothing."
"My dear tender little fools," hissed Grishnak, "everything you have and everything you know will be got out of you in due time, everything. You'll wish there was more than you could tell to satisfy the questioner, and indeed you will quite soon. We shan't hurry the inquiry. Oh dear, no. What do you think you've been kept alive for? My dear little fellows, please believe me when I say that it wasn't out of kindness. That's not even one of Ogluk's faults."
"I find it quite easy to believe," said Merry. "But you haven't got your prey home yet, and it doesn't seem to be going your way, whatever happens. If we come to Isengard, it won't be the great